Thanks for tuning in to the Boiler Express podcast. Join us each week as we dive into all things Purdue sports. You'll hear in-depth analysis of our previous and upcoming games, as well as interviews with players and people involved in the Purdue sports fandom. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and YouTube for our live stream shows as well.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Boiler Express podcast. What's that? Hold on. I'm getting breaking news from Russ, who's in the streets of West Lafayette at the moment. What's up? Oh, Ryan Walters. This just in. Ryan Walters has been fired, according to my source, Boiler Burner on Twitter. He has been fired and let go. And we're here to talk about it. And it's
you saying Russ is Boiler Burner?
Maybe. Oh,
banana. Plot twist.
Tonight we got almost a full barn. Russ is at the nursing home, and I think he's taking an evening nap. So we miss him. Love you, Russ. But tonight we got the biggest brain in the game today, Mr. Frank, the stat tank. And we have Chris, the chief of everything and anything law. And if you mess up in the West Lafayette area, he'll book you and take you to jail.
It's not anything law. Let's pump that brake a little bit there, brother.
And then we got the real host. I'm the sub host because Damon has kids and they sleep for some reason and he's going to be quiet. So, and then we got Damon, the ultimate boiler. How are we doing, boys?
Good.
It's been a week.
Like, I'm actually super excited because, like, there's something to be said about, like, the excitement of a new coach, right?
Yeah, I love a good coach search. I love it.
I do too. I've downloaded Flight Tracker on my phone.
Yes.
Yeah. Well hold on. Let's back it up. Maybe not everyone knows what we're talking about here. So
let's. Good God, I hope so.
Let's break the news.
A firing is broken news when you think about it.
After Purdue, you know, looked semi-competitive in the first drive against IU.
Oh, hold on. Whoa.
Russ is joining us.
Russ, his internet's a little backed up, but he's here.
Yeah. Russ will join us when he's able. But after Purdue had one more yard than IU did points, Purdue had 67 total yards of offense to IU's 66 points. Difficult decision was made to part with Coach Ryan Walters.
Was it difficult?
I think these decisions are always difficult, right? Because, spoiler alert, as he talked about today, he pretty much came in a pretty bad scenario. Like, the cards were kind of stacked against him from day one. That being said, you know, we do expect to have more yards than our opponent has points in a game. So I think both can be true. Purdue has parted ways with him, and coach search. We're looking for a coach. Did you guys really think we'd be here? Like, let's say week three. Did you guys think we'd be here? Russ has joined us.
Ladies and gentlemen, Russ Johnson is in the building.
I was worried we would be here after Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm. Really?
That's when like the nervousness of it began. But I was like, you know, there's a lot of time left in the season, like. But I also knew, like, we played the toughest schedule in the country, so that didn't help. Or top 10 most difficult in the country.
Depending on who you ask.
Yeah, right. It's like, you know, Joe Bob's website says they're 14th.
Old Joe Bob.
And, yeah.
I trust Joe Bob with all my breaking
news. I wouldn't. but it's like Boiler Burner.
he was right eventually.
It was only off by six weeks.
Yeah, his sources were off about a couple months, but
just like that guy that said Coach Brom was leaving Purdue like after his second year, you know, he was eventually right.
Yeah, that's true. It was the guy, some random guy from Tennessee.
Trust Tennessee is what I've learned.
Had a blue check mark, but now we're here
for those now, so they don't mean as much.
So yeah, we're here. We don't have a coach as of right now.
What an intro that is. We're here and we don't have a coach.
Yeah, I mean that's wait, the reality. So,
but we're here. Russ, just to catch you up, Ryan Walters got fired.
Yeah, if you didn't know.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
I know, so the news doesn't hit the nursing home as quick as it does normal life, but nursing
live reaction here from Russ. But
gotta wait till they turn the TV back on in the morning.
So in terms of the transfer portal and who is there right now, tight end Tavion Galloway, who didn't see the field this season, and just given everything that happened with him and his recruitment and his, like, I'm going to come to Purdue, maybe not, maybe I am, maybe I'm not, that he kind of did. And if you guys remember, Ryan Walters basically said, like, hey, man, I've made my pitch, ball's in your court, either come or don't, which I respected. But he's gone. Seems like there may be some other things going on, non-football related. You can Google that. Musa, offensive lineman in the portal. Yanni Karloftis also, Ahmad Branch, Coy Beasley, Anthony Boswell, Derek Rogers Jr., Jamari Payne.
We're going to be here now, fellas.
No, that's it. No, Ryan Brown and Cole Brevard.
Russ Johnson hit the portal.
Ryan Brown did allude to today that he is very open to coming back, which all these guys do have the ability to come back. I can't necessarily blame them.
Ryan Walters.
A lot of it, at least. But are we given all that,
what happened when Walters came in the building and why these guys might be hitting the transfer portal as quickly as they are?
Dylan.
Oh, that is a me thing.
You did the research, yeah.
And, you know, normally I don't talk about conversations I have with people, but like this.
Is Boiler Dowd in here? What was that?
Is he rattling his glass? But Ben Krul.
Chuck E. Cheese glass, too.
Hell yeah.
Hashtag not sponsored.
Ben Krul, who I think is how you pronounce his last name. Frank, am I getting that correct?
I mean, if not, it should be.
Yeah, Cruel. Ben, love you to death. He tweeted some things about different choices Walt made when he came into the building his first year. And so it's public. Like, anything he told me, he tweeted publicly. And it was very interesting. And I know I sent it to – I think I put it in the group chat. But there was a lot of – there wasn't much – transparency in his first few months. It sounded like that, you know, he called guys into the office, said, I'm cutting you, and if you have any questions, you know, talk to A, B, and C, and really didn't give much more than that. And, you know, that would, I think, rub most people the wrong way. If a coach comes in and says, hey, I'm cutting you, doesn't give a reason or a chance for you to, like, for feedback, or if you did something, or if it's more of a coaching staff, you know, change. So that kind of robbed him the wrong way. And he cut some pretty notable guys, if I remember correctly. I mean, especially coming off, you know, the year LeBron's last year. But, you know, he just said there was just not much transparency, and Walt kind of came in and made his changes, which isn't out of the norm, but I think it's more the way he did it than the actual
doing of it.
Is somebody playing Minecraft? What is that?
Yeah. What in the world?
I just hear some soft piano music.
You know it's not me because I can't figure out how to do Minecraft. I still think you're talking about the game on the computer with the numbers and the bombs and stuff.
Lord almighty. So yeah.
Your computer still has Windows 95.
Yeah, so Walt just kind of, and I think I said this in the group chat too, it really wasn't the choices he made, but more of how he went about it, and the more of like, hey, I'm getting rid of you, don't ask me anything, I'm going to send you off to Joe Schmo over here, my director of cuts. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's basically like, here's a 60 second. Hey, goodbye. Pack your bags. You're gone. Hey, if you have any questions, ask this random guy who you're just meeting somebody for the first time. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's
rough.
That's great. It's always crazy when you get that insider info, right? When you get like because it's one thing to know like things happen, but to get like someone's personal experience.
Sources.
Yeah, and it changes too the perspective of what Walters had when he started, right? Like, he made it seem like all he had was, you know, 5 or 10 players and, you know, kind of like the We Are Marshall thing. Like, he walked in and looked at a few faces and was like, man, we got to bring a whole team in here. But no, he cut 20 scholarship players. I think that was the number, right? 20 scholarship players from the Big Ten West champion Boilermakers. So, Dylan, and I know his exit interview kind of said, well, the guys that actually played, you know, most of them moved on or transferred. It's like, okay, but how does the program work, right? Like, when guys move on, the next guys that have been in the program move up because you aren't expecting true freshmen to come in and contribute, right? So those guys that were in the program that have sweat equity in Purdue, in that brand, would have been the guys next up, and he was just like, there's the door, talk to compliance.
Yeah. But and I will play devil's advocate here.
Ooh.
There is a possibility. There is always something to be said about fit. Those guys might not have fit. Those guys might not have been playing because for a specific reason. Nothing, not saying that everybody was like that. Don't get me wrong. But there is something to be said about continuity amongst the team. And if somebody's being a knucklehead that you don't like their attitude because they think they're all that, there's the door, homie. Go find a new home.
And didn't he say something about he gave 10 players this sort of mass exodus approach, and then there were another 10 that he had a more personalized conversation with? Was that?
I was looking for the ice cream truck. I heard somebody's music, so I was like, yeah,
this music, did I understand that correctly? Maybe I didn't, but yeah.
That'd be you, Dylan.
Wait, I'm sorry. I was listening to the music.
No, so yeah. There was a, I think the way he said it, right, there was this mass exodus where he just cut 10 players and gave a 60-second spiel. Yeah. And then there were another 10 that he kind of had more individualized personal conversations.
Yeah, with. Yeah, he definitely, yeah, that was part of it. And I think that too rubbed the other 10 who just got the 60-second boot the wrong way too.
Yeah,
because that is odd when you like pick half of the guys you sit down, have conversations with, maybe like, you know, hey, coach, what did I do wrong? Well, you know, this, that, the other, you could improve here, blah, blah, blah. And then the others, he was just like, yep, later. Talk to my guy here because I don't want to talk to you. And that's the thing I took away from the fact he's just like, I'm cutting you, but like, don't come talk to me because I don't want to talk to you. Like, that kind of seemed off-putting. I don't know if that's regular practice. I've never been a D1 athlete. Shocker. But like if a coach came into me and said, you know, you're out of here, what said you're out of here, and then just said, I don't want, I'm done. Like, go talk to, you know, Secretary Joe Schmo over there. Then I thought that was weird. And that he picked specific players to have further conversations with during that process.
He couldn't send him to the secretary because he fired the secretary, right? So
that's true.
Oh, yeah. Speculation. But I'm sure none of you all have thought about this. This is going to be the first time that any of us have thought about
this. It's a safe bet for me.
Yeah.
Who could we realistically get as a coach? And from that pool, who would you like to see?
Urban Meyer. John Gruden.
I hate it here.
Coach
Nick Saban.
Jason Garrett.
Dylan wants Marvin Lewis. I know it. I know Dylan.
I would drive to West Lafayette, make some picket signs, and march around the stadium saying, "Get out, Marvin! Get out!"
At least we'd be guaranteed to get to the postseason. Just not anything.
Damn! Yeah. I'm Frank. I'm so funny. Darn! All the heck. No, Dan. We don't need that. No. Russell, run it to the ground. If anything, we need Dan, the more handsome brother.
They would have to like do everything before 4 p.m. when Russ got his warm milk and applesauce.
Hey, I will say though, I wanted to say something real quick before we got into coaching potential like candidates. Is that, you know, Chris? You mentioned earlier, like maybe it was some players that weren't quite, you know, gelling with Walter's new way of doing things, and maybe they were right. Maybe they had a point.
And like I said, I'm not defending the process. That's not the way I would have done it. But it's also how, you know, sometimes it's that rip the Band-Aid off theory too, right? You know, some guys, it's just like, hey, man, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, because some guys just aren't comfortable with that long extended letdown.
Who are your guys who would be a serious home run hire, somebody that Purdue could get that you would be like super pumped about?
Yeah. So, important thing there is someone who Purdue actually could get. So,
yes.
No,
I've seen lists that I'm like, in what brain dead backwards?
Bill Belichick, Boilermaker, Bill Bell.
No. Yeah.
I'll start it out with
Pat Fitzgerald is talking about talk with the Bears maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's someone who I don't want. I've seen that name and I don't want that Pat Fitzgerald. Bad. Because everything that happened in the whole Northwestern situation was just really weird. And I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole, but that was weird. And I just want to stay away from that. John Sumrall, right? Like, how do you overlook him? He's done really well. At Tulane, he has a really good record. What, 32-7 overall in just the few years he's been there. And not only that, I mean, he has experience in the SEC, right? He was a linebackers coach at Ole Miss, co-DC at Kentucky. I mean, the guy knows what high level football is, and he's a proven, you know, he's a proven coach and a proven winner. So that's who I'd like to see. If I had my choice, he's young. So there's, you know, possibility for, you know, kind of that long tenure, if that is something we're interested in. But a comment here saying Ryan Day, I don't know if that's a realistic one or not.
I'll be honest. Like if it could be swung, I wouldn't be against it.
I realistically don't think.
Why would it not work out? Why would it not be swung? Because we talk about realistic hires, but who's out there in the job market that we couldn't get if we wanted? You know, because as far as like the coaching market, there's not a ton.
Anyone in the playoff right now, probably.
I mean,
okay, I'm saying that's looking for a job, not that we're stealing from somebody. Yeah, Purdue. Like we're not stealing Kurt Cignetti. We're not stealing Ryan Day. We're not stealing. You know, there's not a coach from a current team, but like a guy that might be looking or that might be moving up.
Yeah, there's not going to be any like Lincoln Riley surprise, like level surprise, right?
Right.
So, but like I think we need to have the conversation or at least like bring it up for a second. But like, is Purdue a good job? You know, and like Mike Babinski said it was, but
it's a good job, but it's not an easy job. And I agree with that.
I agree with that.
I think we're still a top 30 to 40 job. Ooh. You know, we're not, I mean, we're willing to pay between $4 and $6 million, which if you look at the top 25 highest paid coaches, when you get to that 20 to 25 mark, you're talking about guys that are making between $5, $6 or so million. And that's
not going to work anymore. So 2023, somebody posted earlier that Walters was paid $4 million and he was second or third to last in the conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So right, that's what I'm saying. If you compare us to the rest of the Big Ten, but like the Big Ten compared to the rest of the country is elite, right? Like I would put, you know, the top 10 highest paid football coaches are probably, or top 10 highest paid Big Ten football coaches are probably in the top 25 in the country, right?
No, that's actually not accurate. So Ryan Day is the highest paid Big Ten
fake
coach.
News.
So. Okay, I forget about Lincoln Riley now too. But 1, 2, 3, 4 Big Ten coaches are in the top 20, and it is Lincoln Riley, Ryan Day, James Franklin, and Dan Lanning.
Yeah. And like, you don't start seeing $4 million ish. Yeah, Ryan Walters ranked 52.
Yeah.
And pay.
Who we're looking at. Okay, the well,
for example,
game.
So John Sumrall, you know what he's making this year?
Mm. No,
less than a million. 2 to 3.
Like $800,000 this year.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. So if we.
So if that's Purdue, what I'm saying. Like, say throw us yes, five compared to the rest of the Power Four, we are definitely a lower tier job. But even if you take. Okay. So maybe it's closer to like 40 to 50 range, but that's still a team that should compete for bowl games. So it's still a better job for these guys that are up and coming looking to
the question was anybody who we realistically could or we could get or however you worded it.
Who could we realistically get?
I do have a question though about Sumrall. Are you guys concerned at all? Because everything that I've read about him states that he is a defensive minded coach. So does that concern you at all coming off of the back end of this?
No,
I'm concerned more with what's your head coaching experience, not whether you're offensive or defensive at this point.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
And people say like Purdue needs to have an offensive coach. I'm fine with it with a good coach, because a good coach is going to be, I mean, they're going to be good on both sides of the ball.
There was one of them that,
but that doesn't concern me a ton. I mean, he played linebacker, so that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That he would be kind of a defensive guy, but Yeah, just looking at some of these salaries. I mean, Mike Locksley, 5.8 million, almost 5.89 million. It's crazy. He's making more than Jeff Brom. And I mean, that's so. I mean, I guess that's another question. It's like, what does this price tag look like? Are we in the $5.5 million range?
I think it depends on the coach.
Yeah,
who we go after. I think it depends on their experience and all that. And I think maybe it's been mentioned before, at least in our group chat and stuff. I think the likelihood of them going after another inexperienced coach is pretty unlikely. So I could see us paying anywhere between 5 to 7 for a new coach.
This is a good question here. So do we think we need a young up and coming coach or an older coach who may have more experience? I think we need an older guy that would build and maintain the program with a proven system. What are your thoughts?
I think we need somebody that's like
those boxes. That's old.
I think we need somebody like Jeff Brom, somewhere around that age. I don't want like somebody that's super old and like kind of on their way out and maybe stuck in their ways. Because the NIL, especially that part of it, is just so ever changing. But I also don't want somebody that is so young and inexperienced that they get way in over their heads. So I kind of want somewhere right in the sweet spot, like right in the middle, maybe like late 40s to early 50s, something like that.
So with that being said, this is a name that popped up recently, and I'm not against it, even though he just got fired, is Sean Clark from App State.
That was really interesting because you said he was like 40 and 24.
Yeah, he's 40 and 24, 3-1 in bowl games.
Wow.
And never had a losing season. He is 49 years old, played offensive lineman, was a GA at Louisville, Eastern Kentucky. Fun fact, an O-line coach at Purdue.
Oh, well, what years?
09 to 12.
Nice.
So the Danny Hope era.
Danny Hope, yeah.
The pre-Hazel.
Yeah, the Danny Hope era didn't have bad offensive lines.
No, not at all.
It explains the EK Utahs, too, there.
Dennis Kelly.
Isn't Kluger or Kruger on staff there, too?
I think so. And
Dennis Kelly, underrated, Frank. That was a good call.
Oh, yeah.
And then, underrated. He went to App State as co-OC, then associate head coach, and then head coach from 19 to 2000 or 2024.
Why would they fire him, though?
Well, I mean, so he... He just looking at his records from top to bottom, his first record, he was 1-0. So I assume that was an interim situation. If I had to guess, I'm not reading.
Yeah, it looks like he coached a bowl game.
He did. And he won. Yeah. So 2021, he was 9-3. Or I'm sorry, 2020, he was 9-3. 2021, he was 10-4. Then he went 6-6, then 9-5, then 5-6. So it's been there's been a couple dips. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like I said, I'm not looking into this too much, just reading numbers here, but, right. 40 and 24,
that's 70% win percentage or something like that.
66. Yeah.
Okay. I don't hate 1-11,
you know, and that's
Bill Belichick's,
you know, and that's where I think, you know, you throw that guy in there and give him the opportunity with a bigger facilities and some of that stuff. I mean, App State, I think, has pretty good facilities for a group of five school.
They're the surroundings of their stadium are gorgeous.
I hope we play App State sometime.
Look at us,
App State.
Coming up the same way at the same time.
I don't think I want to go back to West Virginia, guys. Just putting that out there. After that experience we had there. Y'all are some big boys. Where y'all from?
Higher pitch than that, Frank.
Oh, yeah, when you guys almost got burgled.
Yeah, and then there was a bag of pills under the car that wasn't there when we got out. Yeah. There's all sorts of things that happened.
What, we weren't supposed to take those?
That's why it felt more weird on YouTube.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, that's a name that's popped up recently, and there's been some recent success. I mean, Game Day's been to App State at least a couple times.
Home of Luke Combs.
Yep. So I think I'm not against it, obviously, not maybe number one on my list, but.
Well, and Chris, I gotta shout you out for being the first person to bring this name, because I don't think I've seen this one yet.
Attaboy, Chris. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, see all sorts of names, but this is one I haven't seen.
I do like I do like that he's got the Purdue connection. So he's been at Purdue before, in a mildly successful, Honestly, for Danny Hope, if he wins five of those games that were decided by 7 points or less, it's a 10-2 season in his first year, and it probably changes the whole trajectory of his career at Purdue.
Well, what's wild is I've seen, especially in Facebook groups, and we all know how
good
that
luck
works. Yeah.
Fighting lately.
The one name that oddly keeps coming up is Brock Speck, and mm-mm, he's in his late 60s. Mm-mm. He's
like, that would have been good in when Tiller retired.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not.
But it's just not realistic.
It's not gonna work. Yeah. Like, it just won't. I'm sure he's great, dude.
Yeah,
the Boiler legend, but like, don't. No, we're good.
One name that I've been seeing pop up pretty consistently that I kind of like. It doesn't sound like the most, like, I don't know if that's the right word. It's not like the,
like, the sexy, quote unquote,
like, sexiest name in the book, but I really like Jason Candle from Toledo. So been there 10 years.
Matt coaches.
And he's had a pretty good, I know that they went like 7-5 this year, but before that, like in the last 2 years, they've won 20 games or something.
Yeah.
Something crazy.
So it seems like maybe we're all in agreement, and Russ, we haven't heard from you a ton, but in that, like, the question that we're answering here is that it's almost like we're in the up and coming coach is where we're thinking.
Yeah. Cause
versus,
I think,
like Brian Kelly, let's say.
Yeah. Like, I have gotten a little bit of flack for it, but there's been conversations I've had with people about not getting another coordinator or like an up and coming coordinator. Now there's two up and coming coordinators that I'd be willing to take a look at. One of them is Garrett Riley.
I knew that was coming.
And I mentioned the other one the other day, and I had it on the tip of my tongue. I can't think about
it. Is it not Shep?
Shep, yes. Yep. Marcus Shepard. I would be good with either one of those guys. But
so here's, and I'm not saying that like that's like a wrong way of thinking, but like,
no.
Walters, throughout his entire tenure, was very open and maybe a little too open about how he didn't really know what he was getting himself into. Like, he didn't really know how much of coaching was fundraising, how much of it was administration, how much of it was not doing the X's and O's and all that stuff. So it's just a completely different skill set. And I'm not saying that, like, I mean, Walters is a proven recruiter.
Right. You know?
But
the only thing I'd
be another gamble as well.
Only thing I'd counter with is this, is that Shep has been at College Football Player Berth Wisconsin and now at Alabama, and Garrett Riley's been at Clemson. All teams that are would Clemson's iffy the last couple of years.
Did you mean wasn't he at Washington?
He was at Wisconsin, yeah. Not Wisconsin.
Oh, my bad. Sorry.
I'm correcting you. That's
yeah, it's fine. I know.
I thought about that one for a second. I'm like, wait.
Yeah,
what? You got your W's crying.
So he's been part of a winning program.
Yeah, right? Being part of winning programs, large programs, understanding what the requirements are to succeed at a big level and what the fundraising part of it is, not just, and no, nothing against Boebert over at Illinois or any of those dorks, but the level of focus is probably a lot different at Illinois when you're still just trying to put words together compared to Alabama, Washington, and Clemson that have won national titles, have been in some of the greatest college football games in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
I have a quick question though about Walters and like talking about how he didn't know that it was so busy with fundraising. Isn't that what the general manager is supposed to like be in charge of and like take care of, is like the all that side of everything?
Yeah, but a lot of times you still want to put a face to a name. Like a GM can go out there, but ultimately you're investing in the coach who's going to
I guess I've just never heard a head coach talk about it as much as he has.
That is true.
The face, right? Like, he's the guy on TV. He's the guy anywhere. He's the face of the program, really. Like, you got to fundraise somewhat.
Yeah.
I think about it in two different ways too. Recruiting, the coach has to go. Like, and we've always known that's a huge part that like never really gets talked about, that like any downtime or bye weeks, those guys are on the road following up with recruits. I mean, they basically don't get a day off. That's always been a thing. But like fundraising, I think about like if someone's trying to convince me to donate money and they send Jim Bob, the general manager, in, it's going to be hard for me to take him seriously. So it was one of two things. Either he was going about it completely the wrong way, which is totally, totally feasible, or he just talked about it a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. And maybe just the system he was in Illinois, that he just didn't get any exposure to that side of the business. It is a business, as he said today. We can talk a little bit more about.
And I guess you could say too that he's been so busy with it because Purdue allegedly he came in with Purdue's NIL situation only having like $400K for the football program, so he maybe had to be pedaled to the metal.
And
that'd be just such a huge focus.
He did come in a pretty rough situation. He came in January, late December, early January, when Purdue was coming off the bowl game with a barren roster. And he did have the interview today, which is unique, we'll say, to have an interview the day after you get fired. And
like a public interview.
Say some pretty interesting things in that interview. But he basically said he came in, had a skeleton crew of a roster, had $400,000 in NIL money at the time, which isn't a lot for anyone who doesn't know. And, basically said that Purdue's not going to be able to win if they keep trying to do things the blue collar, underdog type of way, which he blamed a lot of the failures on, and also said he had no message for the fans, which I thought was interesting too. Neither here nor there, but, but Vince has said things that like we're committed to the NIL, we're committed to revenue sharing, and being competitive in that. Some players' families have said some things on Twitter about Purdue not being competitive at all in the NIL situation. How important is that with our next coach? Like, could that potentially scare away a candidate? Mm-hmm. Hey, come to this Big Ten school. We don't have a ton of NIL money, but we expect you to be good. I mean, that's.
But I will also say that was 2 years ago for NIL. We really don't know what the current condition of the NIL is, because we also know that card got, 800K?
It's speculated, but yeah.
So a guy tweeted me today and said his roommate was friends with Card, and that Card got $900K and a truck. Now, granted, that was this guy's roommate's cousin's dog's neighbor's aunt, but...
Chicken.
I have a big issue with that then, because supposedly Nick Carraway only got $600K in a house or something like that. All right, we should have done more to keep Nick anyway.
I agree, yeah.
Sensitive subject.
Big comment here, so I'm going to read it, and it's from Caleb, and Caleb always has good comments, so that's why I'm going to read this one. Caleb says, like an experienced head coach is able to bring staff with him, at least in OC and DC, because we saw how important the connectedness of the staff is, knowing what each side is doing, but allowing the head coach to lead the whole team. It's hard to believe Walters is able to do that, focusing on defensive play calling at times last year and then calling offense this year. Just wasn't able to strictly be a head coach, and he was plugging the holes in the staff. Clearly lost trust in Kane. Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of that is the inexperience with him, just not knowing how to put your coordinators in positions where you're not having to look over their shoulder, where you're not having to make sure they're calling the plays right, and to actually step back and look at things from that kind of macro level. I think to me, that's why I don't think we're in a position right now where we want to take a gamble on a coordinator, but I'm not like completely opposed to the idea either.
So my top kind of, I'd say four at this point, maybe five, is Bob Chesney from JMU.
Related to Kenny?
Yeah, right.
They're
Jamie,
brothers.
Yeah, Jamie Chadwell from Liberty.
I love that.
Sumrall from Tulane. And Sean Clark from App State.
I'm interested in Sean Clark. I'll have to read more into that one. Russ, I feel like we haven't heard from you. What do you think?
You tired, Russ?
Say something, Russ.
I mean, I'm always tired. It's after 4 o'clock, right? didn't get my applesauce tonight.
I need my milk.
I'm angry. I think Summerall is my top pick. One name that could be thrown out there that wasn't mentioned yet was Monken from Army. Mm-hmm. Maybe the winner of the American Athletic Championship Friday night, they just get Purdue. Like, that's their gift. The interesting thing about Monken, I think, that you want to think about is we're talking about being a school that doesn't have the NIL, that can't go get the top players. Well, what do you have to do when you're coaching a school like Army? You got to kind of work with what you can get, right? Like, You know, like that's not Army. There's not, you know, with West Point and the skill and the effort it takes to get into that school, they aren't just getting anybody. And that's why they run, you know, them and the other service academy have to run such specific schemes that are kind of built around, you know, the sum being greater than the parts. The, you know, so I think that could be a idea, especially if you want an older guy. He's like 57. If you want a guy that's got a little more experience, that can maybe steady the program, that can give us a good solid 5 or 6 years, like get us back to where we're kind of middle ground in the Big Ten, and then we can go get an up and coming coach after that. That's more proven.
Only question about him: can he recruit? Because of what you just said.
Well, yes. I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, if you, what does it matter if we get a guy that can recruit and our NIL is not there?
True.
You know, okay, so we got a great recruiter, but we can't get the guys here. So that's why I'm saying, like, Monken, you know, he's got to be able to recruit. If you're at a school like Army and you've got to grind just to get the guys you're getting on the field, you know, and then do the best with what you got, like, if he actually gets, you know, I've got to believe that Purdue's NIL and ability to get guys in the building is going to be a little bit greater than Army just because of the sacrifice and the commitment you have to make to go to a school like Army. So
that's really good food for thought, in my opinion. Yeah, I'm not opposed to that. I don't know if I want to watch that offense all the time. Just
but he says that's his everyday offense, right?
That's true. Yeah,
he might be adjusting to his play. Let me look to see what he's done at other schools.
Mockbee might leave Purdue as the career leading rushing yards. Like if
I'm gonna throw out a name just to get a reaction. Not saying I want this coach, but it's been talked about. Brian Brohm.
No.
Okay. Yeah. That was.
Apparently, he's.
Florida Atlantic, I think, and yeah. I don't think he'd necessarily want to come to Purdue, and I don't think a lot of people at Purdue would necessarily want him to come back. I think it's a mutual.
That's like that's like a sloppy seconds type situation right there. It's like we couldn't keep my brother-in-law. So.
I got a brother-in-law that's pretty actually kind of friends with Brian, and he's like, no, there's no way he'll go to Purdue. He won't even interview for Purdue. So,
okay. Oh, hey, yeah. Inside source. Heard it here first.
Sources.
Chris, any info for us?
On what?
You were looking up the.
I was like, on what? It's like, sorry. No. So,
squirrel.
Yeah. So he's been like since 2002, he did two stints at Navy, was at Georgia Tech when they still ran the triple option, Georgia Southern, and then Army. So
I wouldn't mind the Georgia Tech triple option. That'd be fun.
That would be.
You just need to have players that can make the option reads.
You'd have to show Brown with that Simpson meme where he like walks out and then walks right back in. Like,
yeah.
There you go, man.
Oh, hey, we're running triple option. I'm back. Let's go.
Yeah. So no, I think I'm not against it, but I'd also be interested in seeing if he went to a place like Purdue, if he would just completely change his offensive theory to make it fit for a Big Ten school.
Yeah.
At 57, I doubt that he's going to make a big scheme change like that.
Right.
I wouldn't mind seeing Purdue football turn into just one massive, giant, well-oiled machine. Just a bunch of like dudes running around at 5 a.m. in their joggers around West Lafayette. Just like all.
I'll suggest an assistant coach if we make that move. I propose that Mike Allstock comes back as a running backs coach.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be really cool. He still looks like he could play. I met him.
Yeah, he does.
Met him the day of the Ohio State game. They had that meet and greet with him. Nice. Given that we're 38 minutes in and we got to talk about basketball still, know that we're going to continue to provide updates. We're not special people. We don't have any insider info, but.
I mean, we're special, but
we're a bunch of nice guys, but be sure to check back in with us is what I'm trying to say, for all your coaching updates. Basketball.
Hey, it's the sport we're good at.
Yeah, it's a sport that we've been pretty good at this season. A lot of games have happened since we met last time, and I feel like it'd almost be easier just to go through the roster, talk about what we've seen from each player, and let that kind of facilitate some of the conversation around the games. How do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right. Well, in no order, I'm just going with the order that they are on my screen here. Let's start with Braden Smith. What have we seen from Braden? What do we like from Braden? What do we not like from Braden? Let's start there.
More reserved in the shooting. I feel like the last few games hasn't nearly been as like takeover. I guess he's not necessarily had to, because Trey Kaufman-Wren's been doing that just fine, putting up Zach Edey numbers this past week. But yeah, I mean, I think he's still he's and I think Frank, you've made this comment before, is that even if Braden's not scoring, he's still incredibly effective on the floor because of all the other things that he does. So I think he was less scoring, but still just as effective in other ways.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that.
So,
All-American.
You think Braden's an All-American?
I mean, I think so. I don't know how many point guards you'd take over him in this country. I mean, he obviously...
Miles Rice, of course.
Miles Rice, definitely. Yeah.
Definitely Miles Rice. He outplayed a certain point guard at an SEC school head-to-head the second straight year, who was a preseason All-American. I think that the thing that hurts him is the fact that he's not going to score 15, 20 points a game. You know, people don't care that you're pouring in 9 assists a game, 5 plus rebounds a game, and 12 points. They want to see a big point number. They want to see maybe a crazy high assist number. But he does it all for us. And I don't think that, you know, without him, I mean, he's the, you know what, the wins above replacement. If they did that for college basketball, I almost guarantee he has the highest rating on our team.
Yeah, wins above replacement is a thing in college basketball, Russ. We'll sidebar about that. Yeah.
It's crazy, though. Yeah, he's averaging 13-9 right now, 13 points, 9 assists.
Yeah, so...
And he's our second leading rebounder.
That's crazy. But on the subject of Braden and his scoring, and you know, I think that the reason... You know, we haven't, or I say, let's say, how am I trying to say this? The fact that he's not constantly looking to score is also what makes him so good. Mm-hmm. Because according to Synergy, Braden Smith coming off a ball screen, he's in the 99th percentile of forcing a second defensive player to help.
That's so crazy.
So teams have learned to basically double him off of ball screens. So I like that. And again, 99th percentile. There've only been like 5 balls or 5 pick and roll scenarios this season with him where help hasn't come on that screen. So teams for some reason want to turn him into a passer and take away his scoring, and he just embraces that role. But I had to look it up while we were talking. Last season he took 10.1 shots per game. Do you want to guess what that number is this season?
7.
10.1 shots per game.
I can't play this game.
Russ can't play this game, no.
Okay, I'm going to say 14.
He's taking 14 this season, mm-hmm, compared to 10 last season?
Yeah.
That's actually 10.3, so it's just about the same.
Oh, okay.
But it feels like he's not scoring as much, or he's not looking for his own shot as much. I don't know. There's just a feel. And maybe it's because the expectation's there. You know, the expectation, you know, is that he's going to be shooting a lot. He's going to be looking for his own shot. But yeah, it's definitely something I think he could look to improve in, though. But I mean, hard to complain about him too much. He leads the country in assist percentage, 48.1. So what that means is he assists on 48% of the field goals when he's on the floor that aren't his own, which is pretty crazy. I got a comment here. The only thing that'll hold Braden back is doesn't score as much as RJ Davis or Sears. Yeah, I mean, I think that unfortunately for things like All-American, Player of the Year, those sorts of things, is they tend to prioritize scoring, understandably so. That makes a lot of sense. But Braden is a full basketball player, and he's everything that I think Purdue needs in a point guard. So I can't.
After going so long without one.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah, Eric Hunter Jr. and Nojel Eastern, and yeah, that experiment didn't work out too well.
That's what we'll call it.
So next up on the roster, let me get there.
Frank forgot everybody else on the team.
No, I'm going from top to bottom. That's all.
I'm just messing with you.
I got to get to the right season because Zach Edey no longer plays for Purdue.
Jeez, oh, damn it.
I'm going to bring that up. Jeez. Yeah,
Fletcher Lawyer.
I saw a stat that him and Braden as a backcourt are like, what, 70 and 12? That's the
something
record?
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's amazing.
I think Fletch has done considerably better than I thought he would this year. I was a little worried because his shot seemed a little wonky towards the end of the year. But he's come out shooting lights out. I mean, I don't remember what it was, but I want to say like at one point he's like what 70% or something like that from three.
Yeah, he's 56% so far.
Yeah. Like the dude is on a lightning pace and still doing it against really tough competition.
Yeah, he's showed up and you know, in the last game against Ole Miss, he hit two really big shots in that game just to kind of one to push the lead and one to kind of calm their run.
Right.
And just that there's a timeliness. But, you know, in my opinion, he's driving to the basket and he's hitting those floaters more. If there was one play against Ole Miss where their point guard, Padula, tried to gamble on a steal, and I think it was Braden who, you know, got south of him, so the defender's behind him and they just swing it right out to Fletcher Lawyer, who just makes this like beautiful floater, like just like 4 feet inside the 3-point line.
It seems way more consistent than it was last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, his shooting was better.
He showed that times last year he was getting better going to the hoop, but this year it's way more consistent. Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, so he's, I didn't see him being a 14 point per game player. He's averaging 13.8. But I'm super happy to see that. I got a question here. Does anyone feel that Fletch passes up some threes you wish he'd take? His percentages are awesome, but some wish he'd take some more each game. Let's attach some numbers to that. Sometimes I think he goes to the pump fake and drive too much, which leads to the turnover at the end of the Ole Miss game. He had the three. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, throughout his career, that's been how he looks to drive to the basket, is he forces those quick late bad closeouts and then he drives them. So maybe that's just a habit. But yes, there are some shots that he's passed up. I do agree with you there. So he is attempting. Oh, go ahead.
I would be interested too in seeing how much of those are creating, like how many of those passes or those threes he's given up are turning into assists. Like, is he giving up an open three for a better shot?
Sure. So Fletcher, this is actually surprising to me. 3.6 three-pointers attempted per game this season. Yeah, I'd like to see that number a little bit higher.
Especially the way he's shooting it.
Oddly enough, that's exactly what it was last season.
Really?
3.6, yeah. Had to make sure I was looking at the right thing. Yeah, 3.6.
So he's just gotten a lot more efficient.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see that number around
Braden, who we're thinking doesn't look for a shot enough, as averaging 5 3-pointers attempted a game.
Is this stuff updated?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, our fantastic sponsor, CBB Analytics. They give us all this great information available at our fingertips. I feel like if I just had to materialize a number, I would have put that closer to. I would have estimated he's doing, you know, shooting 5. So yeah, so maybe that's the, you know, Fletcher's playing really well. He's playing the best basketball of his career. He's drawn a lot of fouls. It's probably the big thing that sticks out when I look at his numbers. 3.3 personal fouls drawn per game. He's been fouled several times on 3-point shots too. There is the one foul in the Ole Miss game where they said he wasn't shooting, which was a terrible call.
I
think maybe he could look to shoot it a little bit more, especially with how well he's shooting. So that's the one thing we can tell him to do a little bit better. Fletch, I know you're listening, so listen to us.
Speaking of fouls while shooting, did you guys see the Northwestern-Butler game? I think it was Northwestern-Butler.
I read about it. The three I got waved off. Yes.
Yeah.
That was crazy. People who are referees and stuff or chimed in and said they got that one wrong. And yeah, that was crazy. Caleb said he's been surprised we haven't gotten screenplays run for him like Sasha and Klein, Dakota, where he shoots off the screen or the double screen. Yeah, we're not seeing nearly as much of that, like Chicago pin down right into a handoff that they used to run for Sasha and Dakota. And Yeah, even Ryan Klein. I just think Purdue has so many scoring options right now. But I'd like to see him, just some plays run for him. We're running a lot more read and reacts versus those kind of scripted.
I've noticed we haven't ran a lot of those roll and replace either.
We actually ran 3 in a row against Ole Miss, but that was it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like generally speaking.
Yeah.
So
Purdue has kind of replaced that with Spain pick and roll, which is kind of the same idea, at least. You set that back screen and then pop out to the perimeter. So next is TKR. TKR, Dylan.
Put Zach Edey numbers.
Dylan, what do you think about TKR?
I love TKR. I think the energy he's brought to electric. I think he's shown really good. I mean, he got a little that last game. Chris and I were talking about in the group chat. He got a little impatient. He got a little, you know, antsy there for a bit. But, you know, you'll have that. We're only a few games into the season. Everyone's finding their groove. Everyone's finding their rhythm. And that's just part of it. But I've liked the way, I'm really happy with it. I think he looks good physically. He looks like he had a good summer, you know, strength-wise and stayed on things. And he looks strong. I think he looks really strong, really quick and fluid in motion. And I'm happy with TKR.
Mm-hmm. I have one critique. Is I think he's, 62% from the free throw line?
Yeah, free throws have been tough.
Yep. Other than that, because he's going to get the piss beat out of him down low.
Yeah.
He's got to hit those free throws. And I think he can draw the fouls, maybe not to the amount that Edey did.
I don't think anyone will.
No, but I think he can get his fair share, especially if we've got a system. Because that little, where he fakes one way, steps underneath and lays it in or whatever. Oh, my God. I love it every time he runs that play. Or runs that motion. But otherwise, I think he seems a lot more confident and he seems up to the task to play that five, and he's done it really, really well, despite what people on Facebook groups say.
Yeah, and that's something he was advocating for. But go ahead, mm-hmm. Damon.
I was going to say, you guys want to know a funny stat? Is that Daniel Jacobson leads the team in blocks per game.
He does, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I think that this is never going to be a shot blocking team with our current roster.
But it lets us do so much more things on defense, I feel like.
So one thing I want to say before we get too far into the roster, you said a few minutes ago, Frank, the number of scoring options we have this year. Did none of that alarm you a little bit during the Ole Miss game, or at least after the Ole Miss game?
None of what?
The scoring options. Because, you know, with this team does feel like it could spread it out more, but how often does Painter drop it to an 8-man rotation this early in the season? And only 6 guys scored, and really that's just counting first getting one bucket and Heidi getting a bucket. So 4 guys did 99% of our scoring.
I'm getting my games mixed up. So it was the NC State game that was the Cam Heidi game, right? And then Ole Miss was the Miles Colvin game. So I think, and I really think, Russ, that just could be the way of this team, right? Is that we've got Braden, TKR, Fletcher that are going to get us your points. And then you need someone else, whether that's Colvin, whether that's Heidi, whether that's CJ Cox, whether it's Burgess, whether it's Jakari Harris. That's
all have shown the capability to do it.
But if we can get 4 guys in double figures, ideally we get 5, but did we only rotate that many?
Only eight guys played minutes, and that
Burgess counts. Didn't check in, did he?
Yeah, the only 8 guys even checked in, and Cox only got 5 minutes. Harris got 15.
Don't they all?
Got 11.
In there.
No, we typically don't see that from Painter, but you know, Painter's continuing to evolve as a coach, and. I'm not concerned about much on this team outside of just free throw shooting and
What about defensively for you?
No, I'm really not concerned defensively. And one thing that I'm working on putting together is I'm taking some methodology that they use in the NBA to do luck adjusted defense. So like if you force, so if you look at the Ole Miss game, guys who aren't shooters hit a lot of shots. Like Purdue invited shots that just happened to go in. It just like be the
story of Purdue's life.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be the equivalent of like Caleb first going 3 for 3, you know, because the team's going to leave him wide open. And that's so like a lot of the shots that hit, especially in the second half, came from non-shooters. And there were a couple of miscommunications, but I feel like the defense from an engagement standpoint looks really good. The help is awesome. Like, and guys are helping the helper, the trap in the box. Well, I love the no middle scheme. I think we have a really good roster for it. You can hear them, you know, Painter calling out no middle and
that's been cool to hear.
Ball screens. Yeah. I'm not concerned.
What's Painter call the ice, a down?
He calls it a down. A lot of coaches call it a down. Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of the older term.
So where I get worried defensively is I don't think this is going to be a team that plays a bunch of lockdown defense personally. Like we will struggle and it showed against NC State and against Ole Miss that post defense is really almost going to be kind of non-existent for us this year because, you know, last year it worked with Edie because Edie was, you know, what he was just tall, right? He was a big dude where he could play a type of no fouling post defense that still challenged you because he was a mountain of a man. You know, Kaufman Wren's only what, 6'10"? So while he's elite offensively in the post and it's hard for, you know, even a guy that might be 7'7", 7'2" to stop him, defensively, they're going to kind of get what they want. And we are going to leave guys open and, you know, it's going to be up to them hitting the shots. And the history of our team, like Chris was saying, the joke is we always have guys that don't shoot well against us. So I think this will be a much more exciting brand of basketball, but it's pretty clear that we're kind of running small ball this year. We've pretty much abandoned the idea of trying to run a big 7-footer, one of our big guys at the post for the, you know, half the game or majority of the game.
So Ole Miss was 7 for 16 at the rim, 44% in that game. And they were 2 for 5 in the paint. So 9 for 9.
State looked more glaring than Ole Miss for sure. But
yeah, I mean, yeah. I feel like Purdue's approach to that, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but I feel like Purdue's approach is just to keep the ball away. And that's why, you know, the first few games, points in the paint allowed was a problem. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing they're going to this no middle scheme.
Well, you've also got Ole Miss doesn't really play anybody over 6'9". So that's another reason that it might not have showed up as much against Ole Miss.
Yeah. And I'm just looking at the last game here, but
yeah.
Well, yeah, that'll be something to keep our eye on. But Trey Kaufman-Wren is materializing. He's coming a really good player. Russ called that when he was on the Big Ten huddle and people gave him a little bit of crap for it. I mean, now it's happening. So,
Cam JR Hyatt has turned from a hater to a believer.
Now it's happening.
Yeah.
Cam Heidi, what do we think about Cam?
Really, really good play lately. I feel like Cam, if he's not scoring, he's at least doing the other things. You know, he's getting boards. He's playing good defense. His defense seemed to improve this year. He seems like and we'll touch on it when we get to Miles, but it seems like they both know they're offensively gifted, but it seems like they've really locked into doing well on defense.
Yeah, I mean, so Cam's averaging 7 points per game, 6.8 points per game, shooting 55% from three. He's not turning the ball over, only 0.5 turnovers per game. He's not assisting a lot either, but I don't think that's something because he is playing the four.
Yeah,
for a lot of this, but I think if you would have asked me this a few weeks ago, I still would have said he needed to look for some more offense, but he's doing that lately. I don't have much to say like negatively. I don't like in terms of where he can improve. I mean, he's always in the right spot. His rebounding, him and Miles seem to be the only two guys that look like they want to rebound. Braden too, but I mean, they're just rebounding athletically like they really want the ball. I mean, to me, Cam has finally taken that leap that we thought he would maybe at the beginning of the season. So
tell me if I'm crazy. Yes,
you're crazy.
But it seems like Cam reminds me of Robbie a little bit.
I feel like Robbie is less athletic.
But. Yeah, but just in the play style, right? Like hard-nosed bulldog kind of mentality. Stupid athletic. Can
Robbie
hit
and Mason Gill had a really athletic love child is what happened.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Mason Gillis and Robbie.
I won't acknowledge it, but I like it.
Yeah. Is there any other things you could say? Maybe he could work on a little bit. I honestly can't think of anything right now. Yeah, he's playing
in that same boat.
He's playing within the system. He's not doing anything he can't. Not much to say there. What about Miles Colvin?
I think honestly the same.
He's coming into his own. Yeah.
Yeah. I think everything we said about Cam, we can say about Miles.
I think we're seeing the transition from Miles going from an athlete to a basketball player. He's no longer just a scorer. He is a guy who can score, as we saw against Ole Miss. He's a guy who now can make insane blocks with, you know, his hand a foot and a half above the rim. He seems to take pride in being a lockdown defender now. And I honestly didn't see that coming, but I love it. I mean, he's 6'5", he's fast, he's quick, he's athletic. And
so would it be really crazy to say maybe a defensive all Big Ten at some point in his career?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If only, like, he's really good at shooting threes and he's really good at defense. If only there was a name for that type of player. Maybe we could make a coin term. We should D and three.
How's 3D? That sound? A 3D player?
No, a
D. Oh, I thought you were joking. I thought you were talking about Raphael Davis.
Oh, also true.
No, I see him. I mean, he's already disrespect to Raphael. He's already a better scorer than Raphael. I mean, Raphael was kind of a 8 to 10 point per game kind of guy, and didn't really develop an outside shot till later in his career. But yeah, Miles has looked really good this season, and I expected the leap from Cam Heidi. Miles is kind of a cold coin flip in my opinion, but he's looked good. He's looked really good. This is an interesting one. I'll be curious to get your all's opinion on this next one. Jakari Harris.
He's a freshman. He's just going through. I think he's just learning. He's not been I don't think he's been under. He's not met expectations, but I don't think he's exceeded them either. I think he's just a freshman learning the system.
Yep, I totally agree.
I love that we are running an 8-man rotation already, because and we've got basically the starting five can be, if we have four guys go off double digits, it's going to be the starting five. And then we got a veteran come off the bench in Caleb First. But then we're going to have the minutes to get Cox and Harris the experience they need without relying on them the way we had to rely on Braden and Fletch their freshman year. Mm-hmm. So when they start to hit the ground running and things start to click, once we get into end of January, into February, I think this team could be lethal on just an 8-man rotation. Because we already have it figured out. It's just when they put it together, then it's like, okay, you're going to see a completely different Purdue team this year in the tournament than you did last year. Because this year, that's where you'll see those weapons. We talk about having, we'll have eight guys that could score 15 to 20 points a game or more at any given night. When Harris and Cox, really do have everything click for them.
Yeah, I think when Jakari and Braden are on the floor, having that extra ball handler is huge. And it's really helped, against the press when teams have tried to press. And I think that, Jakari is we don't expect a huge scoring role out of him, but when he's open, you got to be able to hit the shots. You got to be able to hit the open shots when the ball gets past you, off of a pick and roll or something like that. So that's the only thing that I could say he needs to improve. I mean, he's 15% from three. He's made a lot of plays going to the rim. He's had some good putbacks and against NC State. So I'm not concerned about him scoring, but I just, when you're open, you find yourself open in the chaos that is basketball, you just got to be able to knock those down. It's really the only criticism. He's beyond his age when it comes to defense and ball handling, though, and decision-making at that. So he's a freshman, and I think he has a lot of upside. Next up, CJ Cox.
I think he reminds me of Carson. He's just a little bulldog. Who does not have a limit. I mean, we saw him, I don't know which game it was. It wasn't part of the tourney, but I think it was before that, where he's just boom, 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 just dropping them.
Oh, he had the three shots in a row against Alabama, which was...
Alabama, that's what it was. I knew it was a home game. Yeah. I couldn't remember who it was. But, to do that against the number 2 team in the country, albeit at home, and just have that confidence, right? Dude was going bananas.
Yeah. And for me, my answer is he hasn't played enough minutes to really get a pulse on
it. I'd like to see him get more to like 10 to 12 minutes a game to get that experience up. But yeah, his drive and his dog, man, he's going to be a ball player for us big time.
Yeah. He shows scoring ability and he's getting the experience he needs right now. So
he's a guy that I would bet on making an all defensive team before Colvin. Not that Colvin couldn't, but you know, he's a guy that his defense impressed me right away.
His defense has been doing well.
So last up, I'm gonna cap it here just due to minutes, because then we'd be getting into guys who haven't played nearly as many minutes here. I'm gonna cap it here. Caleb first.
Super, super impressed.
Yeah,
with the best thing about him right now is between the ears.
Yep.
Because he went from playing a big chunk of minutes to that dwindling down to him being a veteran bench player, and he is taking his opportunity. He's not letting it get in his head. He understands that the team is bigger than him. I love everything he has done. Yeah. He could, and there's been a couple times he's brought the ball down or he hasn't hit a layup or this or that, you know, little things, you know, we can always nitpick those. But the general overall take on him is when he's in the game, he's given 110% and you don't doubt it. He's Grady Eifert to me.
You would say he's definitely not a cotton-headed Ninny Muggins.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Russ.
What did you just say? I don't think you're asking.
Have you not even seen Elf? Come on now.
No, I haven't. I've actually never seen the movie.
Wow, yeah. Frank, that's your homework. By the time we get to Christmas this year, you have to watch.
Yeah, I'll do it. Interesting, a little fun fact about
Chris. You don't get that reference. You don't know.
I've never watched Elf.
What? Oh my! All right,
pause. Yeah, so Caleb,
watch it right now.
Caleb's comment here. He's touching on something that I was going to bring up. His finishing is frustrating at times, but he's doing a lot of things well in little areas. Agree with that 100%. There are times where I feel like he could just dunk it. just dunk it, man. Like you don't have to bring it down. You don't have to dribble. Just dunk it.
But how much of that is us being blessed with a 7'4" guy the last 2 years?
People say the same thing about Isaac Haas.
When First is done playing here, I'll forever see images of him cutting backdoor and getting feeds from Edie for easy dunks. That was some of the most beautiful offensive, you know, two-man game I've ever seen, is when they got involved in that kind of action.
Yes. He is doing a lot of the little things. I love him hedging on ball screens, which we do a lot with him when he's in the game. I love that. It's a different look to the defense. Interesting thing, he is attempting more free throws per game than he is shots. So he's 2.9 free throws attempted per game, only attempting 2.5 field goals. So his free throw attempt rate is above 100% for that reason, because that's the ratio of field goals to free throws. So I just would like to see those trips to the line become and ones, probably the biggest thing, because there are some where I'm trying to think of how to phrase this and, you know, have it not come off wrong, but just be a little bit more tough. Just be a little bit more tough. I'm just, you know, just say it. Just toughen up a little bit and finish a little bit stronger. Or finish a little bit more. I think that's my biggest thing. I could, if I were to talk to him, just be like, hey man, just toughen up a little bit. But he's shooting 74% at the line. You know, and he's drawn a lot of fouls too. So can't complain about that. His defense is good. He's doing the little things it takes to win. He's out setting good screens. He's not getting moving screens called, which seem to be called all the time this season. The way he's hung in there, the way he's seen his role diminish, and now he's having to step back into that bigger role, just an embodiment of a Boilermaker.
Yep.
So we're just over an hour. Anything closing thoughts or anything else you guys wanted to talk about before we wrap up for the evening?
Big Ten play. Let's take care of Penn State and Maryland this week.
Yeah, I think we have
some amazing sponsors.
Yes. Before we'll skip the commercials just for brevity, but CBB Analytics, everything you've heard tonight, any numbers you've heard Russ, Chris, or myself throw out, has all been courtesy of CBB Analytics. Great website.
I would be more stupid than I am without CBB.
Great website, great people, great product that they put out. You can get a free subscription. Just look at Purdue Stats, or you can get a pro subscription. Allows you to look at all stats. You can make charts. You can look at scatter plots. You can basically any stat you want. It's on there. Great tool. I have probably 10 tabs of CBB analytics up on my computer and phone all the time. Awesome thing. Russ wanted to talk about Penn State, and then all of a sudden he had to go. Penn State, Chris, scary game. How are you
it
feeling?
Is. I don't know. They're just so damn weird.
Yeah.
You know, they're like I see them sometimes and I'm like, man, this team's dangerous. And then I see them other times. I'm like, do they know how to play Division I basketball?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think with the Mike Rhodes team, you know, you're going to get a good mm-hmm. defensive team. And that's kind of what they've materialized into. You know, they get up into you. They deny a lot. They're not turning people over to the rate that we've seen from, you know, his previous teams. But mm-hmm. I think that, you know, this is going to be a big challenge for Purdue. This mm-hmm. is, you know, I think what Ole Miss was 41st in KenPom. This team's 37th. Yeah. Right now where we sit. 39th. So I mean, this is 39th. Okay. Or 37th earlier today.
Yeah. But
this is going to be, this is a tough game.
The next four games are a gauntlet. It's number 39, Penn State, number 30, Maryland, 26, Texas A&M, number one, Auburn.
And Texas A&M, their press is unique too.
Yeah. It's very fluid. If that's the right way to put it.
Yeah. They trap at half court. They try to slow you down. They're not trying to turn you over as much, but So a little bit of, you know, personnel on Penn State. Ace Baldwin is really known for his defense throughout his career, but, you know, he's leading them in scoring right now, 15 points per game. 8.5 assists, too, so it's not really a guy you can force into either a scorer or a passer. He's going to address both roles and embrace them. Zach Hicks, it's been a pretty big surprise there. Mm-hmm. Shooting 50% from three. I don't know how many attempts he's taking, though. But he's averaging 13 points a game, so it's got to be quite a few. So he's shooting 6 threes a game, so not a guy Purdue's going to be able to sag off of. But, you know, the one thing that I think, you know, is going to be interesting to watch is the Niederhauser, mm-hmm. the 7-footer. Yeah. I forget where he came in from, but he's playing quite well for them. He's more of a mobile big.
Yeah,
He's not like your post-up guy. Switzerland, okay, but he's a transfer, right?
Oh yeah, he was from at Northern Illinois
first
2 years.
Yeah, so but they kind of have that three-headed monster in Baldwin, Hicks, and Niederhauser. So, you know, how's Purdue going to look to slow down someone that big? Because we don't have this size. Is this an instance where we see Will Berg make a reappearance?
Yeah, but I will say also that, and I'm not trying to diminish anything they've done, right? But outside of Clemson at number 24 in KenPom, they've played triple digits in everything else, mostly in the 300s. They've got like 1, 2, 3 in the 300s, 2 in the 200s, and 2 in the 100s.
Yeah, and just looking at the schedule, I mean, they've won all their games convincingly and their mm-hmm. wins too. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, do you think it's an advantage playing at Penn State? The reason I'm asking that is because it's always a quiet arena.
Yeah. And that,
I think the one thing that benefits Purdue is just coming off of basically playing in a high school arena in their last two games.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're not in such a culture shock of not having fans or anything like that.
But if you had to, Chris, if you had to put a score prediction on this, what would you say?
Oh, KenPom says it's a 1-point win. I want to say 77-71.
Okay, Purdue.
Yeah,
yeah, and I like the score predictions in the 70s because Penn State is a very fast-paced team. They're 28th in pace.
Yeah.
Purdue is a very slow-paced team. So we are. This could be a game where Purdue gets 68 possessions versus the 62, you know, that we're averaging. But I think a game in the 70s is realistic. Maybe let's say like 72, 76 Purdue, something like that, which is really close to what you just said. Mm-hmm. I think that's very reasonable and feasible. Just depends on a lot of factors. Obviously, we're not wizards. We don't know the future, but
yeah, exactly right.
We'll have to see what happens. Well,
yeah, for sure.
For the sake of time, we'll talk about Maryland after the fact. Yeah. We'll be talking about a Boilermaker win. I do want to shout out Martin Vintage for being a great sponsor to us. Check out their clothing, all sorts of cool vintage Purdue designs. Use promo code BXP for 10% off at checkout. They have awesome stuff over there. I should need to wear it. I don't ever wear my Martin Vintage stuff on here, but I wear it all the time when I'm not on, yeah, on the air. But check them out, Cincy Blitz Boards. They've also been a great partner to us. Check out their Blitz Boards. Really fun game. You can play it at barbecues. You can play it at bar mitzvahs. You can play it at baptisms. You can play it hanging out in your backyard. Yeah, it's fun. They've done
bar mitzvahs. Yeah. Kills me every time you guys say it. I crack up laughing.
Yeah, yeah. It's just any gathering. It's going to be a fun, right, fun event. But they make these, yeah, really cool boards. They can put different designs on them. They've made some really cool stuff for us. So definitely check out Cincy Blitz Boards. And Chris, unless there's anything else, we'll sign off with a boiler up.
Boiler up. Hammer down. Be Penn State.
Let's do it. Try.